Hello and welcome to the Money and Banking Law Podcast with Joe Silvia, brought to you by the global law firm of Duane Morris. I'm your host, Joe Silvia. I'm a former Federal Reserve lawyer who represents banks, fintechs, and other clients on M&A payments and regulatory matters at Duane Morris. I'm also a core member of our banking, fintech, and digital assets and blockchain practices. The goal of the Money and Banking Law Podcast is to inform and educate our clients and friends on both the fundamental concepts and structure of the banking ecosystem, as well as critical developments in the law and regulation of money and banking. On this episode, I wanted to bring in a clip of a recent conversation I had as part of a fireside chat that I did for the Crypto Law Summit and the Databird Business Journal. So without further ado, let me play a clip from my recent interview. Thanks everybody for being here. Really appreciate it. Jonathan and I spoke last week, to be 100% transparent, and really looking forward to the conversation. Got a lot of great background to get through. As you might imagine, there's some interesting developments that have happened just recently, so we'll get into some of that, I'm sure. But in addition to that, we want to kind of set the stage for kind of the traditional banking and how it works with digital assets. And, you know, I'll hand it over to Jonathan because he's going to really lead us in the conversation today and kind of work through this chat. But I'm excited to be here. I'm Joe Silvia. I'm a partner with Duane Morris. Just like the invitation said, a former Federal Reserve lawyer in private practice now, supporting our clients, primarily financial institutions, financial services, and digital asset companies and fintechs on everything from M&A and strategic transactions through the core regulatory requirements under the Bank Secrecy Act, anti-money laundering, countering the financing of terrorism obligations, and kind of everything in between. So pretty broad scope of matters that I'm able to work on and support our clients. So hopefully they can grow, succeed, comply, and thrive. That's my goal. So I'll turn it over to Jonathan and we'll get going.
Awesome. Yeah. Hey, everyone. Thanks for being here today. I think we have a great program lined up for you. Really excited to talk to Joseph and talk through some of these issues. We have a great expert. I'm just going to probably kick it over to him for lots of these things to talk through, lots of them. But my name is Jonathan Schmalfeld. I am a director of policy with the Digital Chamber. I was an attorney in private practice for 10 years before that. Most recently working in digital assets and data privacy compliance. And in that private practice, we were definitely seeing a expansion from what began as mostly startups and kind of people that had a high risk tolerance were the ones that were really only ones involved in crypto, to what we're seeing as an evolution of more traditional finance, traditional companies trying to integrate blockchain-enabled technologies just for the efficiency purposes, cost savings they can pass on to customers, and due to customer demand in these aspects. So with that all started off, I think a good point to start would be kind of, Joseph, what are you seeing as far as your banking, obviously not mentioning specific clients, but banking sector clients, more traditional financial clients that are kind of looking to integrate crypto services, whether that's custody services or elsewhere? Where are you kind of seeing the major push right now coming from? Is it more customer demand? Is it cost savings? Kind of what are you seeing as what's driving kind of this expansion into traditional finance?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question, Jonathan. So for the most part, with our more traditional financial institution clients, and even those that I just talk with at conferences and events like that, the focus seems to be on the customer experience and customer service opportunities. As you imagine, it's not going to be the case that every bank or every credit union, every traditional financial institution is going to have the kind of customer demand that really requires them to go out and either obtain some new technology or the new shiny toy on the street. But it may be that they just are looking for other opportunities to enhance the customer experience. With respect to digital assets specifically, you know, I think it's right now focused on really the heavily populated urban areas and the banks and traditional financial institutions in those spaces where they actually have customers who are starting to ask questions about whether or not they're able to provide products and services. I mean, we saw back in, the previous, 4 or 5 years, Operation Choke Point 2.0, right, where you've had employees and companies with a bit of struggling to get traditional banks offering traditional bank products and services. And so now, in the wake of that and the elimination of that Operation Choke Point 2.0, we're starting to see banks open back up. But it's right now, it's two things from my perspective. One, they're looking at whether or not it's something that the customers that they have actually are demanding or are interested in. And two, there's a lot of questions from these traditional institutions about, well, I kind of understand that there's a digital currency ecosystem. I understand that Bitcoin exists, but I don't really know what to do with it. And I don't have any customers yet that have said anything about it to me. So I don't know where to start. And so that's where we actually, engage in more strategic type conversations. And I'm sure you've done the same thing with, clients that you've had in the past, but then also at the Digital Chamber. Trying to help clients through understanding not only the challenges and the expectations from the bank regulatory agency perspective and other regulatory agencies, but understanding the opportunities that exist with these different aspects of digital assets, and trying to outline in a relatively straightforward manner what the banking agencies have already said, right? What they said in Trump one, and now what they're saying in Trump two, and what that means on a go-forward basis with respect to opening up certain products and services. So that's where we're kind of at right now. It seems to be for traditional institutions, where is the demand for the products and services, if there is demand? If there's not, then they're not all sticking their heads in the sand, but they're just not fully engaged, right? They just don't. And if they're not fully engaged, then at this point, we advise folks, like, you need to pay attention, because at the end of the day, regardless of whether your customers are demanding these products and services, whether your customers are asking for you to provide custody or safekeeping for their digital wallets, regardless of all of that, the underlying technology, and we talked about this last week, Jonathan, the underlying technology, the digital or the distributed ledger technology, the blockchain technology, that's already transforming the way that finance works globally. And so that's only going to continue to be the case, regardless of whether Bitcoin exists in 10 years or whether, banks are prohibited from doing anything with respect to the crypto or digital asset community in, whatever future administrations we have. So that technology, the underlying technology, isn't going anywhere. And the speed, the efficiency, the effectiveness of it is, the place where I like to really focus with bank clients and traditional financial institutions to say, look, even if you aren't going to be engaged in this, even if your strategic plan doesn't include anything related to digital assets, you still need to pay attention, because this is transforming how finance works and how financial services kind of operate and are provided in the US and really more importantly, globally.
Definitely. And as these banks and just the Digital Chamber represents over 200 companies, all from the digital native to traditional financial businesses that are looking to integrate these products and services. But as you're working with these traditional companies, I think we saw it similar in the kind of rise of fintech, where lots of times it'd be partnerships between banks and existing. There's M&A activity. Some people decided whether they're going to build out their own products and services. So what are you seeing as people are trying to integrate this tech into their existing products and services? Are you seeing more M&A activity? Are you seeing more people are trying to kind of build out themselves, partner with existing kind of crypto companies to handle some of those technically complex aspects of the businesses? What are you seeing in the market?
Yeah, I think for right now, what we're seeing is that the vast majority is banks looking for the right partners. You're exactly spot on with respect to how this industry kind of looks right now versus what the early fintech industry looked like, where we saw more partnerships than M&A. And I think right now we're really in the partnership focus area for banks because banks are just getting more comfortable with the regulatory authority that they have and the new statutory authority, of course, but they're just starting to get more comfortable with this. And so it's, in my experience, except for, a certain tier of banking institutions that have either enough funding, enough expertise and staff to actually build it themselves or to go out and just acquire instead of trying to deal with partnerships. For the majority of institutions, it looks like partnerships are where things live right now. And like I said, we've started to see some of it turn over into the M&A space, but it seems to be much more focused on partnerships. And part of that also is because, as the traditional institutions are looking at understanding the regulatory authority and the regulatory construct, which it's not fully baked quite yet, right? They understand the regulatory construct of third-party vendor management, right? We've had that guidance out there for the better part of 12 or 13 years now, and so they've got that kind of roadmap, whether it's a fintech or a digital asset company or somebody providing some other technology. They've got the roadmap and the expectations that they've seen over a decade of regulatory enforcement actions and so forth. So that, I think, provides the banks, at least that we're talking to, a little bit more comfort with respect to what the expectations are. But I do see that it will turn in, just like the fintech industry has turned, I think, a little bit more into traditional FIs acquiring institutions, acquiring fintechs, acquiring technology, software, and so forth. I do see that coming in the future. It's just that for the vast majority of banks, credit unions, and so forth, it's really they're not quite there yet in terms of comfort level.
Yeah, and we've definitely seen. I think that we are seeing that there are. This is a $3 trillion asset class and growing on a daily basis. And because of that, there have been very sophisticated vendors that have developed that serve very sophisticated clients, whether that's hedge funds or financial managers or elsewhere that were in the space for like Fireblocks for custody or like Chainalysis for certain compliance services and some other aspects of that have been doing kind of very sophisticated levels of either custody or security or some other aspect of the tech stack that I think that these banking boards can go to, these people can go to the boards and say, here's why we can trust these people, and here's what they've had assets under management even before kind of more traditional finance has gotten involved.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. So it's absolutely the case that the institutions, including the ones you just mentioned, are light years ahead of where most banks are in terms of the technology, understanding the technology, understanding how it works, and understanding how, like in the compliance space, for example, how the compliance software needs to be built to address the additional or different risks associated with this new technology or these new digital assets, right? So those companies are just light years ahead of where the banks are. And so that, to me, just continues to support the idea that banks should be leveraging that expertise before they say, oh, well, we're just going to jump in and acquire the institution. And maybe we acquire all of the knowledge with it, maybe we don't, but there's a little bit of a different long-term view of M&A versus a partnership, right? In a partnership, you'd still have the institution existing. And while in theory, if you are going to go through a strategic transaction and acquire that institution and bring it in on board within the bank, hopefully everybody stays. Hopefully the technology continues to grow and develop. But I think there's a lot of those third parties that would prefer to grow on their own terms and prefer to develop the technology and the capability, probably in a different way than what you would see within a traditional bank in terms of allowance for risk factors and so forth. So I think that partnership is really I think that's really where the rubber meets the road right now for digital asset providers and anybody in this ecosystem to provide those services to the banks, because they are just so far ahead. And it's nothing against the banks, right? It's just they're so far ahead technologically and what the capabilities are, and they understand it in a different way than traditional banks do. And so that to me is absolutely where things are and where they should be right now, probably for some time to come at this point, because that technology is just getting so good and so advanced. And banks are still trying to provide traditional products like deposits and loans, and so they're paying attention to it, but they don't have the expertise or the staff or the experience to dive into something really complicated in a way that's beyond partnering with someone that they can just leverage that knowledge with.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed the clip. That's all for today. Certainly, the clip was only about 15 minutes long or so, and we spoke for over an hour with the Crypto Law Series and Summit and the Databird Business Journal. I was also very grateful for Jonathan from the Digital Chamber to host us and really kind of guide the conversation through a couple of different areas. Including how traditional financial institutions are dealing with digital assets and a great many other things. So, if you haven't checked it out, please feel free to go online. Probably the easiest way to find it would be to search for the Crypto Law Summit. And the title of the presentation or fireside chat was Bridging Traditional Banking and Digital Assets, Regulatory Insights, and Federal Reserve Perspectives. So, again, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And look forward to speaking again with everyone soon. As a reminder, if you haven't already, please reach out to me with any questions on any of our episodes at jsilvia@duanemorris.com or reach out to your favorite Duane Morris lawyer. Be sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, thanks for listening in and stay tuned. We have always got new episodes and new topics forthcoming. Thanks very much.